Hey guys, welcome to the Filming with Josh podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Milligan, and this is episode number 108, Nikon Acquires Red.
This is the Filming with Josh podcast, brought to you by Rustic River Media. Welcome to the videographer's home for tips, tricks, and how to make flicks.
Thanks, guys, for listening in to another episode of the Filming with Josh podcast. If you are new to the podcast, Filming with Josh is your home for tips, tricks, and how to make flicks. Here on the podcast, we talk about all things video, from script writing and storyboarding to how to price your work. We cover it all on this podcast. We also have a Facebook group called Filming with Josh, so be sure to go over to Facebook, type in Filming with Josh, and ask to join the group today. The Filming with Josh Facebook group is a private group where you can go and share your work, ask for feedback, post questions, and things of that nature. If you are watching this on YouTube, I want you to know that we are available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Podbean. And if you are listening on one of those platforms, just note that we are, as of earlier this year, now available to watch on YouTube. So this morning, let me set the stage for you. I was in bed. It was like 4:50 a.m. and my 8-month-old daughter, Ellie, had woken up. My wife had gone into her room to nurse her, and it kind of jolted me awake. This happens a couple times a night, usually almost every night. And sometimes when that happens, I'll turn and just look at my phone for a minute to kind of help me fall back asleep, which is really sad, but it's what I do. And I just happened to see a CineD article that was claiming that Nikon had purchased Red. And I was like, is today April 1st? I literally got out of the Safari app and looked at the date to make sure that we were still in March, because to me, that seemed like an April Fool's joke. But sure enough, Nikon announced, and Red had announced, that Nikon had acquired Red. And I think it's safe to say that pretty much nobody saw that coming. It is a wild twist of events that I want to dive into a little bit today, and I want to talk about kind of what led to this moment, as well as what I think this means for the future of Nikon, Red, and the rest of the camera market. So I think for those of you who are listening to the podcast, who have listened over the years, you probably know that it's no secret that I am not exactly a huge fan of Red. And I'll tell you, a big part of that is I don't like the company. I never have. I didn't like some of the decisions that they made over the years. A great example was when the article broke where someone had taken a Red Mini Mag, a quote-unquote proprietary Red Mini Mag, and had taken it apart to find that it was really just a metal housing with an off-the-shelf SSD inside. It was like a couple $100 worth of parts, but Red was selling it as a proprietary media solution for over $1,000, really over like $1,200 and up, depending on the size. And that really, to me, solidified why I didn't like Red as a company. Like, I'm all for making a profit. I own and run a business, obviously, myself. So I'm all about making a profit. And I know that you have R&D and you've got different technology that's proprietary to you that you want to be able to make money off of. And I think that's totally fair. I mean, as capitalism goes, like, that's capitalism at its finest. That being said, I do think there's a point where you start to rip off your customers, and the Red Mini Mag was just a great example of how Red had been over the years kind of ripping off their customers by claiming things like proprietary media and then selling it for an exorbitant markup, when in reality it was just some off-the-shelf parts that were thrown together. And I already didn't like Red, but when that news broke, I was like, there, that right there is why I don't like Red. And as a result, I've been in the business, video business, for like 12 or 13 years, and I've never owned a Red camera, and I've never had a desire to own a Red camera. I think also that the culture surrounding Red has never been kind of my jam. I mean, I consider myself kind of an outdoors kind of guy. I love to hunt. I love to fish. I love Texas. I love manly things. But at the same time, Red is kind of ridiculous in the way that they would market stuff, like the Red Weapon and the Red Dragon, the Red Epic, you know. And it just, everything from their naming structure to the cult-like following that they had, and they had really, and not, it was not just Red's fault. I mean, it was kind of the people within the market too, but had really hyped up Red to make it seem like once you bought into Red, like, that was it. That's the pinnacle of your career. Like, once you buy into Red, you're really going to be a professional cinematographer or whatever. And I know so many people, I literally probably know 10 to 15 people personally who bought into that hype over the years, especially earlier on in Red's journey when their cameras were $20,000-$30,000+ to get into. I have many friends who bought into their systems and a year later listed their cameras for sale online because they couldn't justify owning that camera anymore because they bought into this hype, this dream, like, hey, if we'll buy this camera, it's going to help us get new clients and be able to raise our prices, only to find out that, hey, the market that you're in is the market that you're in. You can't just buy your way into a new market with a camera overnight, at least not in most cases. And so most people would find out after a while that, hey, this is a really expensive investment that's not making me the return I was looking for. And they would end up listing it for sale online and they would switch back to something like a mirrorless camera. I literally know a guy who dropped like 30 plus grand on a Red system years ago and turned around and sold it within like 10 months to swap to like an A7 R2 at the time. And it just blew my mind. But when asked about it, you know, he would publicly would say like, hey, I just wasn't making a return on this like I thought I was going to. And I don't think that some of that is Red's fault. I mean, some of that is just the industry that had hyped it up. Like I had a client one time, we were on a shoot overseas and we were crushing this project. And I had an FS7 with me because it was a doc project, right? And the FS7 is a fantastic doc camera, especially at the time because there was no FX9, there was no C500 Mark II or C300 III or anything like that. So at the time, the FS7 was like one of the best documentary cameras that you could have. And it was the appropriate tool for the job. Yet my client who I was with, who knew nothing about video at all, but he had heard the name Red before, looks at me and says, man, if you think what we're doing is good now, just wait till we get you into a Red system. And I was like, dude, I would not want to take a Red on this project. I mean, we were a small crew on a dock project in the middle of nowhere overseas. A Red camera at that point in time was the absolute last tool I would want with me. I would have taken a mirrorless camera over a Red for that particular project. And a large part of that was because we were hiking into the mountains and we were in the middle of nowhere. We had not really a great way to charge batteries very often. So we were having to work with a camera like the FS7 that kind of sipped on batteries and have a bunch of them with us. And a Red there, I mean, we would have been, honestly, we would have been kind of screwed because a couple days in, we would be running low on battery and not quite sure how we would charge the batteries. Not to mention the system would have been big and heavy and loud and just not the right tool for the job. I think that cameras are all about having a tool for the job. That's what it is. Cameras are nothing more than a tool. And unfortunately, people that bought into the Red hype over the years view it as more than a tool. They view it as their way into leveling up and their way into buying themselves into a new market, into new industries with new clients. And the reality is at the end of the day, it's just a tool. And it's what you do with the tool that matters. It's your experience, it's your knowledge, it's how you market yourself. Those are the things that are going to make or break you in this business, not just going out and buying a camera. So the hype, the culture, the overpricing that Red has done over the years always drove me crazy. And then also, I never liked that patents that Red had over R3D. Now, I'm all for patents. I am very much in favor of capitalism, and I think that having the ability to have patents and being able to defend and protect your patents is a great thing. But I do kind of feel like Red's patents over their compressed RAW was a little ridiculous. And part of that's not Red's fault, right? Like they got it granted and they've defended it and won multiple times over the years, including even to Apple, who they beat in court over compressed RAW. Red has had that market on lockdown and you kind of can't blame them for it because they got it granted, right? However, because they had that patent, it really has, in my opinion, stunted the growth of video codecs in the camera market from companies like Canon and Sony and Nikon, who obviously just changed that, and Blackmagic and so on and so forth. And so some of these companies like Canon that finally came out with a version of an internal compressed RAW codec, they had to get it licensed through Red And they didn't even have anything close to the codec capabilities that Red has. I mean, it was 12-bit versus 16-bit. And I mean, what the, like the Canon RAW light is vastly different than R3D. I mean, R3D is a great codec. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you that. It's a great codec. It's a great format to shoot into. But because of the stronghold they've had on the market, everybody else either had to go through them to get a license, and the license they got allowed them to run some form of a 12-bit compressed codec, again, making it to where competition couldn't have a codec similar to Red. And then on top of that, other companies like Sony just were never able to get that done. And so now they had to run it through something like an Atomos recorder to be able to have RAW. And again, it's only 12-bit RAW. So I don't necessarily blame Red for this. I think it was a business move, a strategic business move on their part, and I can understand as a business owner myself why they would want to do that. But it did always bother me that they were able to get that granted, because it stunted, in my opinion, a lot of growth in the video industry. Whereas if you look at RAW formats for photography, no such patent exists today. And so you can have a multitude of different RAW codecs, compressed, uncompressed, and photo cameras, and there's no stronghold there. So why is it that once you add motion to the imagery, all of a sudden Red is the only one that can say who can and cannot do that? That's something that's always kind of bothered me. So again, I'm not blaming Red necessarily for that, but they were the ones who got that brought to the attention to the U.S. Patent Office, and were able to get that granted. And so it did. It sucked. It really did. And I think it's really stunted growth over the years. And that patent was set to run out in 2028, but Red recently filed to have that patent extended to 2037. I don't think there's any word on whether that's been approved or not. But I'm really hoping it doesn't get approved, because again, that will continue to strangle the video market a little bit, and I hate that. So those are some of the things that bother me about Red. I think that they're overpriced, overhyped, and that the culture that comes with Red is just something I've never liked, and I've never personally liked the idea of a single company being able to have a stronghold over compressed RAW video codec. So those are some reasons why I never have bought into the Red system. Now, I do want to go on record and say that I think that Red does make some very innovative products. Their sensors are great. They have a really nice color science. I prefer the Arri color science and the color science that you get in cameras like the Venice over Red, but Red has a really nice color science in general, and that is widely accepted, and I have nothing against it. I think it looks good. They've got great sensors. They can capture really wide dynamic range, not quite as wide as like the new Arri 35, but they're up there. I mean, they produce some amazing sensors that can capture a really wide dynamic range. And as stated a minute ago, I think their codec R3D is amazing. I think it's the best format in the market, hands down, for sure. And honestly, that codec is the reason why Red, in my opinion, has been able to be so successful over the years, because they were able to control the market on who can or cannot have the ability to record a 16-bit compressed RAW codec internally. And I think that that is a large part of the reason, if not the only reason, they've been so successful beyond some of their other things. You know, like I know that their sensors are great, their color's great, but their codec is what makes them Red. They do have some nice options in terms of frame rates and resolutions and things. They've always been very innovative there. Sorry if you hear my kids in the background. I wasn't expecting to do a podcast today. It's just, I had to do a podcast after this news came out. So if you hear my kids, it is what it is. They're home. And so, yeah, sorry. Sorry, but not sorry. But anyway, I feel like Red has always been innovative. They've offered great frame rate options, great resolution options. They've had some really innovative camera designs. The modular design has been widely sought after by other camera manufacturers that would like to have a modular design. You're starting to see that in companies like Kenefinity and stuff that realize that the modularity is accepted by the film industry or the camera industry as being a really great way to design a camera from a customer standpoint however you want it to be, whether you wanted to rig it up on a shoulder rig, whether you want to put it on a jib and keep it kind of stripped down, whether you want to put it on a car mount or a drone, or whether you want to make it suited for handheld shooting. That modularity has been a great part of their product design, and I think that has been another reason for their success. So I think that they're a good company in terms of the products they create. It's just the culture and some of the things that come with Red that I've never liked. That all being said, I never in a million years thought I would see the day that Nikon, of all people, would buy Red. In fact, if anybody would have bought Red, I thought it might have been either Canon or Sony. Canon because they're already working with Red and had a relationship with Red, or Sony just because Sony's a really big company and they make moves like that. Nikon, to me, came out of nowhere. I never saw that coming. But let's talk about what may have caused this and what this now means. So a couple years ago, Nikon released the Z9. And the Z9, in my opinion, is one of the, if not the best mirrorless camera on the market. And I say that as a Sony shooter who has two A1s. And I think the A1s are great. I love them. They work really well with my FX6 and my FX3. I use them a ton for photography, and I do use them a lot for video, especially wildlife video, where I can utilize the Super 35 4K crop from that camera. It's an amazing camera system. But the Z9 is better, in my opinion. It has more features. It has backlit buttons. It has an oversampled 4K full frame option that the A1 doesn't have. It can do 8K60, which the A1 cannot do. And it has a form of a compressed raw codec. And when Nikon released the Z9 with that compressed raw codec, a lot of people, myself included, were kind of scratching our heads wondering, how is that possible that they were able to get away with having a compressed raw codec in the Z9? Now, Canon had already done this in some of their models, but it was kind of understood that Canon had a relationship with Red. And from what we all gather, Canon was giving Red some of their autofocus research and design so that Red could implement some of that into their cameras. And they were giving them access to the RF mount and the EF mount so that Red could make their cameras with EF and RF mounts. And in exchange, Canon would have the ability to use a form of compressed RAW. And there might have been some money that changed hands there. And some of this is pure speculation, but that has been what the market has generally understood to probably be the case between Canon and Red. And to see Nikon do that, to me, came out of nowhere. And I was really surprised that the Z9 had compressed RAW. And I either thought to myself, either they struck a deal with Red that nobody knows about, or they're going to get sued. And sure enough, the latter is what happened. They got sued. So Red took Nikon to court over their compressed internal RAW being in the Z9. And they had claimed that that was an infringement on their patent. And it went to court, and everyone assumed Red was going to win because Red has won this case every single time, including, again, against Apple. So why would they all of a sudden lose to Nikon? So everyone just kind of thought Nikon would lose this case and future Z9s would not have the compressed RAW codec, and Nikon would release a firmware to take it away from the current cameras. And if you own a Z9, just don't ever upgrade your firmware. But last year, the case got dismissed. Now, from what I gather, there was a motion filed by whom I'm not sure to extend the actual court proceeding, and that got denied by the court. And so they had to go ahead and move forward with the official court date. And then shortly after that got denied, the case got dropped. Now, there are two ways a case can be dropped, and in one way it could never be brought back to court again, and in another way it could. And the way it got dropped made it to where it could potentially go back to court. So a lot of people, again myself included, thought, okay, we're not sure what's going on here. Maybe Red had to go back in and figure a few things out on their end before moving forward with the lawsuit. But it was kind of, I think, understood that they would probably go back to court and refile against Nikon at a later date, but it never happened. And instead, Nikon came out with a Z8 that had the same compressed RAW as a Z9. And I did find that to be kind of odd. It's like, man, okay, so they weren't going to court over this. The case gets dropped, and now here comes the Z8, and it has compressed RAW, and the lawsuit's never been brought back up again. And it's been that way for the past year, and I've always kind of wondered, like, what happened there? Did they strike a deal and settle with with Red outside of court? We may never know. But what we do know is that Nikon, as of today, went on to purchase Red. And I'm wondering, and again, this is all pure speculation, but I'm wondering if what happened is either Nikon had a case so strong that Red thought they might actually lose. And that is why they filed to get the court date pushed back. And when that got denied, they just dropped it for the time being. And then maybe at that point, Nikon went up to them and said, hey, we'll just purchase the company if you're open to it. That's pure speculation, but I think that's one possibility. Another possibility is that Nikon may have found it would just be easier to just buy Red and continue offering their product and also be able to offer the Red product line and maybe have some product integration between the two. And maybe Red thought that would be a fine idea. Maybe Red even approached Nikon and said, hey, look, let's just drop the case. And if you would be interested in entertaining the idea of purchasing us, who knows what actually happened. But what we do know is the case got dropped. The Z8 came out. The case never got refiled. And then, boom, Nikon buys Red, which is really interesting. Now, I think this is interesting for many, many reasons. First off, Nikon used to be one of the premier brands of photo cameras. In fact, Nikon had video cameras many years ago, like 60s, 70s time period. But they haven't really been in the video market for a very long time. A lot of people think that the Canon 5D series, the 5D Mark II specifically, was the first DSLR with the ability to record video internally. And that actually isn't true. Nikon was the first DSLR that came out with video capture. So Nikon technically was the first company in the DSLR video revolution. It just really didn't take off, unfortunately for them, until the Canon 5D Mark II, which kicked off the whole DSLR revolution, which led to the mirrorless line or the mirrorless revolution, etc. But Nikon did offer it first. It just never took off the way it did with Canon or Sony or Panasonic for that matter. And Nikon, really since then, until the Z9 came out, has been pretty irrelevant. In fact, there was a period of time where I kind of thought Nikon might go out of business. Their products weren't very innovative. They were starting to fall behind Canon and definitely were falling behind Sony. In fact, Nikon ended up dropping behind Sony. Sony caught Nikon and was nipping at the heels of Canon for camera sales, which is impressive considering Canon held onto the market for so long. But Nikon just started falling backwards and not reporting really good sales over the last handful of years. But when they switched over to their mirrorless lineup, they had a few innovations finally. One was their lens mount. It had a really large diameter to the lens mount, much bigger than like Sony E-mount, for example. And Nikon touted that as giving them the ability to potentially offer faster lenses and their prospective focal lengths than companies like Sony might be able to do. Whether or not that's true, hard for me to know. I'm not an engineer, but I can kind of see why they would claim that their mount was superior. I kind of understand what they were saying, and I do think it kind of makes sense. And they have since then, the announcement of their Z-mount lineup, they've come out with some really great lenses. And so they've had a long history of making good glass, and they started just making good glass for the Z-mount line. Their mirrorless cameras, though, that they first came out with were, they were okay. They were competitors to the A7 III and the A7 R3, but they weren't anything special, and nor were the Mark II versions. But when the Z9 came out, and eventually the Z8, that's when Nikon, to me, finally started to say, hey, we want to continue to innovate and we want to get back some of our market share. And it wasn't until the Z8 or Z9 that I felt like that happened. But once those products came out, it was like, oh, okay, you guys can still be innovative because those cameras were really good, really good. And again, in my opinion, some of the best, if not the best, mirrorless offerings on the market. And if I were starting fresh today and I didn't shoot video exclusively, like if I was, like right now I shoot a lot of video, right? So I have an FX6 and FX3 and I need more video oriented cameras like that. But if I didn't need that, and I was just a mirrorless shooter and I did a lot of photography and some video, I might consider having Nikon just because of the Z8 and Z9. I think they're great, great, great cameras. And I feel like that was Nikon making a statement that, hey, we still are here. We're going nowhere. We still plan to compete with these other guys. And they, part of how they did that was coming out with cameras that had better codec options than like Canon and Sony. Like they have some really great internal RAW options, and they offered things like 8K 60, which Sony doesn't offer that in any of their mirrorless bodies. Canon does in a couple of their bodies, but you have to do some workarounds to get it to work. The Z9, they can do it straight up in camera, no problem, which is really impressive. And their cameras are really well built. They've got a great build quality, great weather sealing. They feel good in the hand, good button layout, nice backlit buttons, great design, great screens, and great codecs with great images for video and great, obviously great stills images. And so I think they're great cameras. And I have often said that I think that they're probably the best mirrorless cameras on the market currently. But was that enough for Nikon to compete against Sony and Canon and Panasonic for video? I would argue no, because I think it was too late. Canon has had for a long time now their cinema line of cameras, the C500 line, C300 line, C200, C100, which those are older, of course, but they've had that lineup for a long time, and now they have the C70 and whatnot. And Sony, of course, has the FS5, FS7, FX9, FX6, Venice, Venice 2, and now the Burano. And I just feel like Nikon, there's no way they could develop cameras like that and just all of a sudden come into the market and compete with Sony and Canon. And that's why I think, despite the Z8, Z9 being innovative products, Nikon was still far behind the competition. But now that they own RED, that changes everything. Because with the purchase or the acquisition of RED, Nikon has instantly become a player in the high-end video market. And I think this is so interesting because there's so many ways that Nikon could go about handling this transition. And I want to talk about a few of those ways that I think are possible. And I have no clue. And I don't even have speculation on which way they will go because I truly don't know what their plan is. But I want to jump down some potential options that may happen now that Nikon has acquired RED. One option is, and I think this is a likely option, is that RED continues to operate as RED and Nikon continues to operate as Nikon. I think that is a very likely possibility. But even if that is the case, if RED stays RED and Nikon stays Nikon and Nikon just owns RED, I still think you're going to start to see some of the technologies between the two companies cross over. For example, I think that Nikon would implement some of their autofocus technologies into the RED system. RED has tried to implement autofocus, but they've not done it very successfully. I would never use autofocus on a RED camera today. I don't think their cameras are good enough for autofocus. It's gotten tweaked and better with some of the newer models that have come out, but it's still not great. Nikon has a pretty good autofocusing system. I don't think it's as good as Sony's or Canon's, but it's still good. And I think that they will start to implement some of that technology into RED camera bodies. I think you'll start to also see, on the opposite side, some of RED's codec options possibly leaking into some of Nikon's mirrorless cameras. I say possibly because I think it's also possible that they want to keep the two lines completely separate, where you have a mirrorless photo line, but if you're serious about video and you want the best codecs and the best sensors and a different color science or whatnot, you have to go to RED. I do think it's possible that they do that, but I also think it's possible that they come out with a line of cameras that have some of the codec options and some of the color science that RED has, or a mixture of the RED Nikon color science, so that you could own a RED as a primary workhorse video or cinema camera, and then own a Nikon mirrorless camera as like your B cam, and the two would cut together really, really well because they would share a similar color science or a similar codec. And so I definitely think it's possible that you'll see some of the RED tech and the RED color, the RED sensors, the RED codec coming into the Nikon mirrorless line so that the two lines work together cohesively. It's also possible that that doesn't happen. It's hard to say. But I do think you will see some crossing of technology, some autofocus technology being implemented in RED, and some of the sensor tech, color tech, and even some of the codecs going over to Nikon. I will say, though, that Nikon photographers love the look of Nikon stills cameras, and they have kind of their own look. So maybe they don't want anything to do with Red's color science on their stills line, because Nikon stills photographers like Nikon's look. Hard to say. It's really hard to say what they're going to do, but it is interesting. Another option is Nikon could dissolve Red. I don't think this is as likely, because I think that owning the name Red for them is beneficial, because it already has some sort of a place in the video market. But it is possible that Nikon could take all the technology and all the R&D and even some of the employees from Red and then dissolve the company and put those employees to work at Nikon and come out with a line that's like Nikon Cinema. I could totally see them doing that. That way, everything is more streamlined. You've got their mirrorless stills line, and then you've got their cinema line, all with the same lens mount, similar color science, and similar codecs. That's definitely a possibility. And I don't think that that is as likely, but I do think it's possible. And honestly, I would not be totally opposed to that. I think a few years ago, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, it would be less likely that they would do that, because Red was such a big name in Hollywood. But honestly, if you look at a lot of the awards and things that have gone out, Oscars and Academy Awards and things that have gone out over the last several years, it hasn't been to productions that have been made by Red cameras, not in a while. In fact, if you look at a lot of like the Sundance films that come out, and a lot of like people who are nominated for Best Picture, if you look at the cameras that are used for those productions, it's almost always either some sort of an Arri or a Sony Venice or Venice 2. Like pretty much all of those awards, or all of those movies that are being awarded, or all the ones that make the big film festivals, for the most part, it's Arri or Sony Venice. Red has fallen backward on that over the last several years. So it is possible that maybe the Red name doesn't mean as much now as it used to, because of that. The Venice and Arri, the variety of Arris from the Alexa, Alexa Mini LF, the new Alexa 35, those are really the biggest cameras at the highest level today. And Red is being used for production still, but just not as much as Sony or Arri. And I think it is possible that maybe the Red name isn't as valuable now as it used to be. Maybe the tech is, maybe the patent is, but maybe the Red name isn't. So maybe it is possible that they'll absorb Red and take their tech and their R&D and their employees and dissolve the company. Who knows? I think 5 or 6 years ago, I wouldn't have felt that way. But now, because Red has kind of fallen behind Sony and Arri so much, it's possible that that could happen. It's also completely possible that Red, or the Red RAW, the R3D codec, it is completely possible that patent goes away. And I know that sounds crazy. Like, you're probably thinking there's no way. And on the one hand, it would make sense for them to keep it, because that's probably a big part of what they purchased when they purchased Red, was R3D and that patent. But if you think about it, Nikon took Red to court because they felt like they had a case against Red being able to have a patent on compressed RAW. So if you think about it, Nikon, without Red's permission, felt good enough about their argument to be able to put compressed RAW in their mirrorless cameras, despite the patent, that they went ahead and did it without Red's permission, and then went to court with them over it and got the case dismissed. So it is quite possible that Nikon has found a way to claim that Red's patent shouldn't be valid, and they knew they had a winnable case. And if that's true, then wouldn't that mean that any other camera company out there also could find a way to prove Red's patent invalid? And if that's the case, well, Nikon opened the compressed RAW options to people to be able to have or to license the rights to use it without even having to go to court. Will they dissolve the patent? Or will they keep the patent, but other companies like Sony and Canon now say, okay, you might have had a winnable case here. We're going to get our legal team to figure out what it is that you found out that you could prove to disqualify Red's validity for their patent, and then we're going to file the same lawsuit against you. It's possible. So I don't know what to expect there. I don't think that Nikon would buy Red and then get rid of the patent, but it does make you wonder, like, if Nikon felt like they had a winnable case, which I think is likely that they felt that way, it does make you wonder if they feel like their patent really probably isn't valid anymore and that other companies could probably and should probably be allowed to use it. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's really hard to say, but it'll be really interesting to see what happens. I don't think that patent that was being requested to be extended to 2037, I don't think that will happen. I think it will get denied, and I think that in 2028, the patent will be up. And anybody who wants to have compressed raw can have it. But it is possible that here in 2024, going into 25, 26, it is possible that camera companies like Sony could start offering a more robust 16-bit compressed raw codec without having to have permission from Nikon, depending on what happens here, whether or not Nikon no longer decides to defend that patent or whether they decide to start leasing it to everybody. Who knows? It'll be really interesting to see what happens with that. Another thing that's going to be really interesting is what's going to happen to current model RED cameras that have RF mount. I think that RED will continue to develop cameras that have RF mount, but will they come out with new models that have RF mount? Like, I think they'll continue to develop or maybe produce is the better word. They'll continue to produce the products that are already being already on the market, like the Komodo X, the V-Raptors, etc. I think that those will still be available for a while in RF, but it does make you wonder, are future RED cameras still going to have RF? And I think it's possible that they don't. And the reason why I feel that way is for sure, if RED stays a company, if Nikon keeps RED around as a brand, which I think is the most likely scenario, I think for sure you're going to see models with a Z mount because Nikon's going to want to sell more of their glass. In fact, they might start coming out with even newer glass, maybe some cinema glass and whatnot, because they have cameras to match with their glass. And they have a long history in optics. So it makes sense that any new model RED that comes out moving forward, if RED stays a company, will have a Z mount option. But the question is, will it also have an RF option? And I think the answer is no. And the reason why I feel that way is because Canon had a deal with RED. And now that RED is acquired by Nikon, who's a direct competitor with Canon, why would that still work? And maybe it will. Maybe there'll be some exchange of tech or information or some sort of licensing deal where that can continue to happen, where RED cameras can continue to have RF mount. But I could see a situation where Canon no longer lets RED have access to the RF mount, or maybe Nikon and Canon just don't strike out a deal and it doesn't happen. But I could see where potentially newer models of RED cameras don't have RF mount. And I think, honestly, the biggest loser in this whole situation, honestly, is Canon, because Canon was getting the license to use a compressed RAW because of the deal they had with RED and because they were giving RED the RF mount. And that helped increase, obviously, Canon's sales of RF lenses and whatnot. But with Nikon absorbing RED, if RED no longer comes out with cameras in RF mount, that could hurt Canon RF glass sales. And on top of that, they could, depending on what they do with the patent, they could take the patent or the licensing away from Canon to allow Canon to continue to offer a compressed RAW codec. Again, this all depends on what they do with the patent, but I think that there's a potential that Canon users can be affected by this, depending on what happens with the patent. And I also think there's a potential that if you're a current RED owner and you are shooting with RF glass, it's possible that you won't be able to do that in the future. I don't know if that's true. It's pure speculation. But I will tell you that if I was invested heavily in the RED system and I had all RF glass, I would be a little nervous. And I don't know. I don't know that that means that you won't have a future camera that you could upgrade to, but I think it's possible that you won't. And so if I was a current RED owner and I had RF glass, I'd be a little nervous today. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I think there's a possibility that they'll stay with RF, but I also think there's a good chance they move to Z mount and they only have Z and potentially PL, because I don't think RED could exist without offering a PL mount. But it'll be really interesting to see what happens there. I also think it's interesting for anybody that was looking at getting into RED and hasn't purchased a camera yet. I don't know that I would buy one at the moment. Or let me take that back. It's not that I wouldn't buy one. I just wouldn't invest solely in the Red ecosystem today and buy a Red and invest in RF glass just yet. If you haven't already done that, if I were you, I would hold off a little bit and kind of see what happens. I think that this acquisition is fantastic. And I think that in the end, several years from now, we're going to see how merging the two companies together is going to be really great for camera owner operators in the Nikon/Red system. But today, because we don't know what's going to happen, I think it's a little dangerous financially to be investing money into RF mounted Red cameras and RF glass if you plan to stay in the Red ecosystem. If I were you and that was you and you were looking at potentially doing that, I might hold off a little bit and just see what happens. What does this mean for people like me who shoot with Sony? Well, honestly, not a whole lot at the moment. I think that Sony's going to continue to be Sony and nothing's really going to change there. I still prefer Sony cameras over Red cameras, even if Red comes out with Z-mounted cameras that have some Nikon tech in it. I think that could be really cool. But Sony still fits my workflow and what I do very, very, very well. And most people who shoot Sony probably will feel the same way. Sony's got its own thing going on, and their cameras are very innovative. Their cameras have a really great product path from the lowest end mirrorless cameras all the way up to the FX9, Burano, Venice, and Venice 2. And I love this system. I love working with the FX6, FX3, my A1s, they're all great. I love that I can rent a Burano or a Venice or Venice 2 for certain projects and have a color science that matches my already existing cameras and that can accept the same lens mount. I like the whole ecosystem that Sony has going on, and I think most Sony shooters will feel the same way. So I don't think Sony's going to be too terribly affected by this right now. The only thing I could see Sony being affected by is what happens to the internal RAW patent. Because if Nikon either gets rid of the patent, which I don't think they'll do that, but what I think is more likely is if they make it more easily licensed by companies, I think it is possible that Sony could license that for Nikon. Because Sony already sells Nikon sensors for their mirrorless cameras. All of Nikon's sensors in their mirrorless cameras are Sony-designed sensors. So it's possible that Sony could strike a deal with Nikon to get access to compressed RAW internally in their cameras. Or maybe Sony sees what Nikon sees and that there's a winnable case there, and maybe Sony challenges Nikon in court over the validity of the patent to get access to internal compressed RAW. But I don't think that's going to happen, just because I don't think Sony's going to want to rock the boat with Nikon sensor sales. I think that Sony's going to continue to develop sensors. Nikon's going to continue to buy them for their mirrorless line, at least for now. And I don't think Sony's going to want to rock the boat there. But it is possible that Sony could reach out to Nikon to try to license internal compressed RAW for future cameras. And I actually, as a Sony shooter, do hope that happens. I don't think Sony's current external 12-bit ProRes RAW option is the greatest thing in the world. That's why I don't use it. I shoot internal XAVC I on my cameras and S-Log3, S-Camera3 .cine, and I think there's a lot of latitude there, and it's great. And the 12-bit ProRes doesn't really offer much over that. All it does is increase your workflow and the amount of things that you have to deal with on your camera when you're shooting to record externally. I don't think I would ever do that, because it's not something I'm interested in. I just think the internal codecs is plenty sufficient on the Sony cameras. But if Sony was able to get internal compressed RAW, 12-bit or better, hopefully better, then I might consider doing that as an alternative to XAVCI for some projects. It just depends. But it'll be interesting to see what happens there. As a Sony shooter, I think that there's not a whole lot that's going to change right now outside of seeing if Sony somehow decides to acquire the ability to have internal compressed RAW in their cameras. And I do hope that happens, but we'll see. So it's very interesting news to wake up to. Very out of left field, like never saw it coming. I'm a little surprised. I'm a lot surprised, but I actually think this is good. I think this is a good thing for the camera market. I think Red probably saw an out and probably knew it was a good time to get out. I mean, the market's changing today, right? Like AI is starting to become more of a thing. And I think that's going to start to affect some of the video business where some companies might just have AI driven videos or mainly AI driven videos over hiring crews. I think that AI is going to start to affect stuff. I think that Red's already seen a dip in the large high-end video market where Aerie and Venice kind of rules. And so I think that they probably started to see a decline there. And in fact, I think evidence of that is how much more affordable their cameras have gotten. Why else would cameras start, would Red start coming out with cameras like the Komodo or the Komodo X if they didn't have to? I think they had to come out with these cheaper cameras because they weren't doing as well at the high end anymore because everybody was shooting on Aerie or Venice. So maybe Red saw that. They saw that cameras were becoming cheaper and cheaper. People weren't wanting to pay as much for a high-end camera anymore and that the market was shifting and AI was coming on. And maybe they're like, hey, we still own the patent technically. There's still 4 more years left, whether it gets extended or not. We still got 4 more years left on this thing. Let's get out while we have a chance. And Nikon was a willing buyer. So it's quite possible that Red jumped the jumped ship while they were still doing okay before things got worse for them. And I think that's most likely what happened is Red wanted out. Nikon knew they had a winnable case. Red didn't want to lose to Nikon, so they struck a deal and got out while they could. And I personally think that's what happened. But I think it's good for the industry. I am glad, personally, to see the Red culture get broken up a little bit because I can't stand, again, some of the things that Red did. And I think that a lot of people couldn't, actually. And that's why Red started to come out with more affordable products and why they no longer use mini mags and they had to start using CF Express Type B cards because people started to see through some of the stuff that they were doing. But I'm glad. I'm glad that that's over, or hopefully will be over. I mean, it's possible that they keep that culture, but I don't think they will. I think that Nikon, they are a company that is really well structured, really well organized. They've got great marketing material, and they don't have that kind of culture. And I don't think that they're going to take on that kind of culture. So I'm excited to see Red get a little bit of a change here. I'm excited for Nikon. Nobody wants to see Nikon go away. So it's exciting to see that they are going to still be a competitor, and it's going to be good for the rest of the market, including people like me that shoot with Sony, because there might be a potential opportunity to get access to better codecs moving forward. And if nothing else, competition is always a good thing for the end user. So seeing Nikon become more competitive in the video market can only mean good things for future product development for Sony and Canon users. So I think this is overall a really good thing. The biggest loser out of all of this, I think, is Canon and also potentially owners of Red RF cameras. But we will see. Maybe not. It's very interesting, though, and this is a lot of speculation and just opinions and possibilities, but I think that's all we have right now. But this is great news, I think. I can't believe it's not April Fool's, but I am excited to see what happens. And if anything major updates in this chain of events within the next few months, I will be sure to make another episode to update this. Anyways, thanks guys for listening to another episode of the Filming with Josh podcast. Remember to go to Facebook and join the Filming with Josh group. And if you don't follow us on YouTube, please go ahead and follow us on YouTube. We are new on YouTube, so we don't have a ton of subscribers yet because it's not something I've ever really done much of, but I have been asked to start making my podcast available on YouTube. So I would like to start growing that a little bit. So if you get the chance, go to YouTube and follow the channel. Thanks again, guys. We'll see you all next week.
To learn more about Rustic River Media, visit us online at rusticriver.media. Thanks for listening to the Filming with Josh podcast. Catch every episode by hitting subscribe today.